Good evening.
This probably isn't the best way to start out a sermon, but I'm going to go ahead and do it. I'm more nervous than I've ever been in any sermon I've ever done. And it's partially because of the topic isn't necessarily the most fun topic to talk about, but hopefully you'll find it valuable either in your own life or in dealing with other people. Tonight, we're going to talk about dealing with depression as a Christian. I should clarify for our visitors, I'm not a doctor, I'm not a psychologist, and I'm not going to pretend to be. I'm just a brother. But I've dealt with depression before, and I still do. I might have been surprised to some of you to hear that, but in high school, I was diagnosed with depression. In college, I was diagnosed with PTSD. If you want the details of that, you can ask me at a later time. I'll be happy to talk with you about it, but now it's not the time. So how can we, as a Christian, deal with this? First off, let's notice that it is something to deal with. I'm not the only person in this room that has ever seen or faced tragedy. I'm just looking around off the top of my head. There's members here who have lost family members, gone through divorce, lost jobs, you know, financial difficulties. And that brings us down. We all know that, but sometimes I think we want to turn a blind eye to that. So hopefully we're going to take the blinders off tonight. So two things, just so you kind of know how the lesson's going to go. First, we're going to look at how can I, as a Christian, deal with my own possible depression? And then how can I help others who are struggling in this area? Because that's so key, because not everybody faces it. Sure, some of us, we all have bad days. You know, you have that day where you come home from work or school and you're like, you know, that is not making the top 10 as far as good days that I've had. But I'm talking about more long term, maybe months, maybe years. For some people, it might be a lifetime. We don't know. How can we work with that? First, we're going to look at some causes of depression. And probably most of you already know these, but it's good to look at just to be aware. And I'm not in any way saying these are all things I've faced. They are not in any way, so please don't think that. Some of the causes that members of the church that I know of have faced are abuse of different kinds, personal tragedy, like I said, divorce, death of a loved one or friend, physical or mental trauma. You know, there's all kinds of studies. The media is big on talking about that, whether it's with the military, NFL, things like that. Age can cause depression. You can't do the things that you used to be able to do. Your eyesight's not good. Your health's not good. Maybe you can't, you're not as mobile as you used to be. You have to rely on others. That can cause depression. And we're going to talk about how we can deal with that in a Christian manner. And then, like I said, financial work problems. And there's a list. Can go on and on. So let's go ahead and get into it. How can we work with our personal depression? First thing I want to say about it is all depression is not the same. Some might be caused by sin. And if it is, then we need to work with that. And we need to fix that. So we're going to look at a man who got kind of down, but he had the solution already. And that, of course, is Cain. In Genesis, the fourth chapter, God tells Cain what he should have already known. So Genesis chapter 4. And we'll start on we'll read about verses 2 through 7. Excuse me, 3 through 7. In the course of time, Cain brought to the Lord an offering of the fruit of the ground, and Abel also brought of the firstborn of his flock and of their fat portions. And the Lord had regard for Abel and his offering, but for Cain and his offering he had no regard. So Cain was very angry, and his face fell. The Lord said to Cain, "Why are you so angry, and why has your face fallen? If you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin is crouching at the door. Its desire is for you, but you must rule over it." Now, I don't want to make anybody afraid thinking that if we feel depressed, it's because we've sinned. Not necessarily true. But as we should all the time, sometimes we can use that downtime where we're feeling down as a bit of a wake-up call. Maybe look at ourselves and be like, maybe is there something I should be doing or not doing? And if that is the case, take the appropriate measures to change that. But what about when it's not? We're going to look at some characters that, well, of course, there's nobody in the Bible that says, oh yeah, you know, David had depression, Paul had PTSD. Nobody says that. We see characters who get down and have rough times. So we're going to look at some of the characters in the Bible for a few minutes. We're going to look at David. You know, David has some really high moments in his life. You know, he kills Goliath as a boy. He becomes almost like a hero to the nation of Israel. Remember, the women are singing songs about how Saul has slain his thousands and David his 10,000s. That would probably be a pretty good feeling if you're David. Of course, he gives appropriate credit to God, but he's probably feeling pretty high. But turn to Psalm 22. And while we're reading this, we're going to read the whole of Psalm 22. I want you to think about yourself. Do you ever feel this way? Or do you know people that feel this way? We're going to make a few points off this, so we'll be coming back to it later. Psalm 22, starting verse 1. To the choir master, according to the Doe of the Dawn, a psalm of David. My God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from saving me from the words of my groaning? Oh my God, I cry by day, but you do not answer. And by night, I find no rest. Yet you are holy, enthroned in the praises of Israel, and our fathers trusted. They trusted, and you delivered them. To you they cried and were rescued. In you they trusted and were not put to shame. But I am a worm and not a man, scorned by mankind and despised by the people. All who see me mock me. They make mouths at me. They wag their heads. They trust in the Lord. Let him deliver. He trusts in the Lord. Let him deliver him. Let him rescue him, for he delights in him. Yet you are he who took me from the womb. You made me trust you at my mother's breasts. Oh, on you was I cast from my birth, and from my mother's womb you have been my God. Be not far from me, for trouble is near, and there is none to help. Many bulls encompass me, strong bulls of Bashan surround me. They open wide their mouths at me like a ravening and roaring lion. I am poured out like water, and all my bones are out of joint. My heart is like wax, it is melted within my breast. My strength is dried up like a potsherd, and my tongue sticks to my jaws. You lay me in the dust of death. For dogs encompass me, a company of evildoers encircles me. They pierce my hands and my feet, I can count all of my bones. They stare and gloat over me, they divide my garments among them, and for my clothing they cast lots. Now we're going to stop there, and we'll return to Psalm 22 later. How is David feeling right now? You want to talk about feeling down? He is feeling, I think we can say very confidently, he's feeling pretty hopeless. His condition is not good. He talks about being laid in the dust of death, being surrounded by evildoers and bulls of Bashan. I don't know what a bull of Bashan is, but I know it's not good. You can tell by his description of it. So what about some other characters? We'll come back. We're going to come back to David, like I said. We're not going to turn and look at this because we pretty much have to read the whole book. What about Job? Did Job do anything wrong, or did Job do anything to deserve what happened to him? We know he didn't. Why'd that happen? That happened because he was good. The devil said, I'll make him curse God. Or he says to God, I'll make him curse you to your face. And God let it happen. And we see Job, he does mess up a little bit, and he gets this distorted picture of what's reality. He asks God, God, why are you punishing the righteous and lifting up the wicked? And sometimes that happens to us, and we're going to come back to that point in a little bit. But even Job, in all of his suffering, immense suffering, more than I would venture to say any of us have or will experience, he stands strong. And then one of my favorite characters that we don't talk about a whole lot, even though we should, is Elijah. Elijah spends a lot of his life working alone in hostile conditions. Who's the, just to get the backstory, who's the king at the time that Elijah is prophesying? Well, that would be Ahab. What do we know about Ahab? It's said that he was worse than any of the previous kings in Israel. That's saying something. Because Israel had some horrendous kings. Ahab's worse than any of them. And, to top it off, it's not just Ahab. Who's his wife? Probably one of the most wicked women in the Bible. It talks about her hunting down and killing the prophets of God. Then we see the contest previous to what we're going to read between Elijah and Jehovah God and the prophets of Baal and Ashtaroth supported by Jezebel. So to say that Elijah has it hard is a bit of an understatement. And we see that get to him a little bit. Turn to 1 Kings 19. We'll be reading verses 1 through 8. Ahab told Jezebel all that Elijah had done, being killing the prophets, and how he had killed all the prophets with the sword. Then Jezebel sent a messenger to Elijah saying, "So may the gods do to me and more also, if I do not make your life as the life of one of them by this time tomorrow." I don't think anybody in here has ever experienced a death threat. But when the queen of a country who has killed prophets says, "By this time tomorrow, you will be dead," that would be an extremely stressful situation. Let's continue and see what happens. Starting verse 3. Then he, being Elijah, was afraid, and he rose and ran for his life and came to Beersheba, which belongs to Judah, and left his servant there. But he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness and came and sat down under a broom tree. And he asked that he might die, saying, "Is it enough now, O Lord, take away my life, for I'm no better than my father's." And he lay down and slept under a broom tree. And behold, an angel touched him and said to him, "Arise and eat." And he looked, and behold, there was at his head a cake baked on hot stones and a jar of water. And he ate and drank and lay down. And the angel of the Lord came again a second time and touched him and said, "Arise and eat, for the journey is too great for you." And he rose and ate and drank and went in the strength of that food 40 days and 40 nights to Horeb, the mountain of God. So you can imagine being Elijah. Not only are you experiencing, has the queen said that she is going to have you killed within a day, you're out in the wilderness, you're hungry, you're thirsty, so not only are you mentally stressed, you're physically stressed, and those work together, you're tired. What's he ask God to do? Now, it's admirable that he doesn't think about killing himself, but he wants God to. He doesn't want to keep living. He doesn't want to keep doing this. What does God do, though? Does he? You know, I think sometimes if we were God and somebody asked us that, we'd be like, all right. And we would kill him. God doesn't do that. God provides what Elijah needs. And I think we can say, miraculously, because he eats a cake of bread and some water, and that lasts him 40 days. We don't hear of any other food in that time. If God will do that for Elijah, what about us? What about when we're down? Let's turn back to Psalm 22. And if you hadn't noticed, David's already done some of this, but he's going to do a bit more. He says how bad his condition is, but he also has hope. So Psalm 22. I think we stopped in verse 21. We'll go back up to 19. We'll start in verse 19. "But you, O Lord, do not be far off. O you, my help, come quickly to my aid. Deliver my soul from the sword, my precious life from the power of the dog. Save me from the mouth of the lion, for you have rescued me from the horns of the wild oxen. I will tell of your name to my brothers in the midst of the congregation. I will praise you. You who fear the Lord, praise him. All you offspring of Jacob, glorify him, and stand in awe of him, all you offspring of Israel. For he has not despised or abhorred the affliction of the afflicted, and he has not hidden his face from him, but he has heard when he cried to him. From you comes my praise in the great congregation. My vow I will perform before those who fear him. The afflicted shall eat and be satisfied. Those who seek him shall praise the Lord. May your hearts live forever. All the ends of the earth shall remember and turn to the Lord, and the families of nations shall worship before you, for kingship belongs to the Lord, and he rules over the nations. All the prosperous of earth and eat and worship, all the prosperous of the earth eat and worship, before him shall bow all who go down to the dust. Okay, we're not, for the sake of time, we're not going to keep reading Psalm 22. It's an encouraging psalm. I encourage you to read on your own time. What's David doing? He's already acknowledged how bad his situation is. And I mean, it sounds terrible. But he doesn't stop with that. He says, okay, this is bad, but God, I know you'll take care of me. When we're feeling down and we're feeling depressed, maybe we're dealing with horrible situations, that's one thing that we can hold on to. Job, even though he questioned and he asked God, where are you? What are you doing? Try me and you'll see that I didn't do anything wrong. God was always there. And you see him telling Satan, you cannot take his life. You cannot touch him. This is what you're allowed to do. You are not allowed to do anymore. God knows what we can handle. And he tells us that he's not going to let our trials and temptations exceed that point. So if we are, I know this doesn't sound like much help, but it should be. If we are going through a trial, that means God knows that we can handle it. So we can take confidence in that. So I hope you see that when we're dealing personally with our, the times in our lives when we're down, maybe pretty far down, keeping our focus on God is so key. It's vital. So now what can we do to help other people? Because like I said, not everybody deals with depression. And not all of us deal with that at the same time. Sometimes, some of us are doing real well. Life's real good. And others of us don't have that luxury at the same time. So what can we do to help other people? And I hesitate to say this because I think this congregation is already quite good at it. I think we have a general willingness and desire to help each other, which is great, and I hope that grows and grows. But in Ecclesiastes, there's a verse that I hope all of us take to heart. Ecclesiastes chapter 7. And we'll be reading verses 2 through 7 of Ecclesiastes chapter, or 2 through 4, excuse me, of Ecclesiastes chapter 7. It is better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting. For this is the end of all mankind, and the living will lay it to heart. Sorrow is better than laughter, for by sadness of face the heart is made glad. The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of mirth. What does that say? On a first read, sometimes that's like, it seems completely backwards. Why would I want to go to the house of mourning? And how does sadness of the face make the heart glad? It doesn't make sense. I think it does. When things are good and we're laughing and having a good time, those are good times. Treasure those. Thank God for those. But when does growth come? When does strengthening of the bonds with God and with each other come? When things are good or when things are hard? If you've ever done any physical training, whether you play sports or you run or something like that, the shower time after your workout is not when you get stronger. It might feel better than your workout, hopefully, but that's not when you're going to get stronger. That's not when things are going to get better. What gets better is when you're going through the strain. So, focusing on verse 3. Sorrow is better than laughter, and by sadness of the face, the heart is made glad. I don't know. I'm not the Bible scholar I hope to one day be. But I think sometimes if we can talk things out, if we can let out things that we have bottled up inside of us, that makes our heart lighter. I'm pretty sure we've all experienced that. I think that's what this verse is talking about. If you disagree, by all means, I want to know. So sometimes we need to do that. One of the lies that depression tells, and it's kind of like when Stephen talked a few months ago about struggling with internet pornography and things like that, often a struggle like that, it isolates you. What are some of the lies that that'll tell, that will make us think? Well, if I'm isolated and I struggle with this, nobody else does. Nobody else will understand. I can't tell anybody at church. I can't tell my family. What does that do? You ever watch the nature show? You see the lion stalking wildebeest or zebra or gazelle or whatever? Who do they go for? Or what do they go for? They don't go for the animal in the middle of the herd. Why would they do that? That'd be hard. They go for the one on the outside by itself. Same thing spiritually. When we let ourselves be isolated and we don't talk and strengthen ourselves with God and with our brethren, you're setting yourself up to be hunted by the devil. Don't do that. So, how can we as a group of God's people make it so that we can talk? And if you think this isn't a problem, let me tell you it is. There have been so many, I can't count, friends who have told me, you know, I'll say, have you talked to somebody at church, like one of your elders or the preacher, or talk to your parents about it? And they say, I can't. Why not? They don't understand. Maybe they don't. Maybe you've never been in that situation, but I think you'd be surprised. How can we make it so people are willing to be open with their problems so that they can hopefully grow closer to God and not be isolated and vulnerable to the devil? How can we do that? First thing, and this is kind of practical. Well, first, before you do that, let's turn to James chapter 5. And James is such a good book, and there's so many practical things in it. James chapter 5. In verse 13, we'll read a few verses here. Starting verse 13. Is anyone among you suffering? Let him pray. Is anybody cheerful? Let him sing praises. Is anybody among you sick? Let him call for the elders of the church and let them pray over him, anointing him with oil in the name of the Lord. And the prayer of faith will save the one who is sick, and the Lord will raise him up. And if he has committed sins, he will be forgiven. Therefore, confess your sins to one another and pray for one another that you may be healed. The prayer of a righteous person has great power as it is working. Now this is talking specifically about sins, and we should be willing to talk about sins with each other. And depression isn't always a sin, like I hope I pointed out. But it is a struggle. So go to each other. Be willing, if someone comes to you and says, hey, I'm struggling, what can you do? I think this verse tells us. Go to God in prayer by yourself for them, and even more powerfully, go to God in prayer with them. That is one of the greatest things you can do. Do not underestimate that. But how can you be an approachable person? Some people just naturally are. There's some people, and you know them, who you can go and you can talk about every single thing under the sun, and they'll be okay with it, and they'll do whatever they can. Some of us, and I think I'm this way, not so much. But how can we, as Christians, be approachable? Or how do we know if we are? Sometimes we don't know if we're approachable or not. The way to know that is, do people come to you with problems? If they don't, ask yourself why. But how can we? I think the key thing to this is, we have to know our brethren. If we don't know each other, why would we tell each other about our failings and our weaknesses? I don't think we will. I mean, you don't just go to the cashier at Giant and say, yeah, I'm dealing with depression today. Okay? They're not going to be able to help you a whole lot. Samuel told a story about a guy that walked into an enterprise and started talking like that, and everybody's like, do we need to call the police? I mean, you know, that's not helpful. You go to the people that you know well and that you trust. That's the other thing. Be trustworthy. I'm, of course, not saying that because I think we aren't. But be trustworthy. And also be open yourself. When I know that another brother struggles with something that I struggle with, I'm much more likely to go to that person. So be willing to be open about your own failings and your own struggles. And then something that you can do that our society has lost the ability to do, it seems like, is say nothing. Job's friends did one thing right, and they did it real well. For 7 days and nights, they sat with him, and they said nothing. When did they fail? As soon as they started talking. Sometimes just showing that you care will be a huge help to somebody. If they feel they want to talk, let them talk. Don't always go into a situation trying to fix somebody's problems. A lesson my dad taught me, and I'm not married, in case somebody didn't know that. But sometimes, you know, I remember as a kid, dad would come home from work and mom would have had a bad day, probably caused by me and my siblings. And she would start telling him about it. And he would say, hold on, do you want me to fix the problem or do you want me to just hear about it? And sometimes she would say, I want you to just hear about it. And sometimes she wanted him to fix the problem. So sometimes we go in and we're like, all right, I'm going to fix this problem. I'm going to make everything good. Don't do that. Be quiet. If anything, if you feel the need to talk, be talking to God. So what are some other things to look for? Because sometimes we don't know somebody who's dealing with dangerous depression. If you've never dealt with it, that can just seem so foreign. So this is some practical stuff of things to look for. So like if you see people that you think might be struggling, some things to look for that might give you a red flag, a bit of a heads up. They might not all be there, and some might be different. If you see scars and marks on them physically, that's becoming a big thing. I dealt with friends in high school, friends in college, friends now who fall into self-destructive things as a way to try to deal with depression and problems. If you're struggling with that, find help. Don't keep doing that. It won't make it better. Trust me, I know. Some other things. Change of habits that don't make any sense. Sometimes if somebody's a real social person, they're an extrovert, they like to go to the, all the Bible studies and parties and things like that, and suddenly they're not, look around. Find out why. And then things like if they change their eating habits, I'm sure your parents know when your kid comes home from school and they're sitting at the dinner table, they're just kind of picking at their food, kind of know, hey, something's up. Maybe we need to talk. And that's true with us as adults. And things that can be very serious, if you have a friend who starts talking about death or thinking about death a lot, there's a time to be immediate in your reactions. And don't be afraid. If you see some of these things in yourself, get help. Don't fight alone. In Ecclesiastes, it talks about a threefold cord is not quickly broken. What does that even mean? You take three cords and you tie them together and you twist them together, you're not cutting through that nearly as fast as you will one. Don't rely on yourself. Rely on God first and foremost, obviously. But rely on your brothers and sisters. I know that was a hard topic to talk about, but we did. And I know it wasn't a topic really to bring people to Christ, but hopefully it'll make us think. Like I said, if you struggle with this, don't let yourself say it. Don't stay alone. Don't stay isolated. Find help. There's many people here that can help you. We've got four elders. I will 100% vouch for the fact that they will help you with anything you can bring to them. We've got two preachers that will do the exact same thing. Stephen, and he's not here, but I'll say it, is one of the people that helped me deal with my problems and my struggle with this the most. He's amazing. Scott is too. And there's a room full of people who are here. I'll do what I can. Like I said, I'm young. I'm not a doctor or anything, but I'll do what I can. So find help. If you see people struggling, maybe not with this, but struggling with anything, ask them why. Ask them if there's anything you can do. If it's pray with them, then do it. If it's sit with them, do it. Do what it takes. We're going to look at one last chapter. One last, not the whole chapter, nobody freak out. One last passage. And that will be Hebrews chapter 12. Last few years, this has quickly become my favorite verse, or passage, I mean. In Hebrews chapter 12, first verse. Therefore, since we're surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely. Let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. Folks, keep your focus where it needs to be, on God. Don't focus on yourself and your problems. Fix them if you can. Focus on God. Everything else will hopefully fall into place. If we do that, we can all complete this race, and we'll complete it together. Like I said, I know this wasn't to bring people to Christ, but if you're not a Christian, you want to be. Tonight's a great time to do that. If you need prayers about this topic or about anything else from the congregation, we'll be happy to do that for you. Whatever your wishes are, let it be known as you come forward as we stand and sing.